Learn Persian with Chai in Conversation, Attar's Parable of the Moths that Wanted to Know More About Their Beloved with Omid Arabian, Part 2. Salam, Omid Jan. Thank you for joining me for part 2 of this wonderful story.
Salam alaikum. My pleasure once again.
So as you heard in the last episode, if you haven't heard the last episode, go listen to that first. These are cumulative. We introduced this story, Attar's Parable of the Moths, taken from what you might know as the Conference of the Birds, which we talked about that title a little bit as well. So there are 16 lines that Omid has chosen for us to learn in this series on this particular parable, and we are currently on lines 5 through 8. So just as we did in the last lesson, we're going to read lines 5 through 8. Omid's going to read the Persian, and I'm going to read the English. Is there anything that you want people to think about before we get started, Omid?
No, just to remember, if hopefully you've just listened to or recently listened to the first part, just to remember where we were in the story, which is that a group of moths have gathered and in a dark place one night, and they're seeking their object of desire, their beloved, which is the candle. And so they want one of them. They're wishing that one of them would go and bring some awareness, some khabar, some news of the candle. And so one of the moths flies out towards a palace where the candle apparently is located, and from a distance sees some light in that palace emanating from the candle, and then comes back to the group, comes back to the other moths, opens its notebook, and begins to relate kind of what it has understood about the candle.
Episode 1 recap. Okay.
That's right.
Okay, so line 5.
Sure. ناقدی کوداشت در مجمع مهی گفت او را نیست از شمع آگهی.
A pundit sage who had a position of authority among them said, "This moth does not have a true understanding awareness of the candle."
شد یکی دیگر گذشت از نور در خیش را بر شمع زد از دور در.
Another one of the moths went and passed through the light. It flung itself towards the candle from a distance.
پرزنان در پرتو مطلوب شد. شمع غالب گشت و او مغلوب شد.
Fluttering its wings, it entered into the beloved's radiance. But the candle, its heat won out. And it, the moth, became overpowered.
بازگشت او نیز و مشتی راز گفت. از وصال شمع شرحی باز گفت.
This moth also returned and revealed a handful of mysteries. It told an account of its close encounter with the candle. This is a lot of has happened in these 4 lines, okay? Yeah. So let's go over it. 5th line again.
5th verse, yeah. ناقدی کوداشت در مجمع مهی گفت او را نیست از شمع آگهی.
So a pundit sage who had a position of authority among them said, "This moth does not have a true understanding awareness of the candle." Okay, let's go through this one word by word.
Sure.
So first, ناقدی.
So remember that the first moth has gone and brought some news, some awareness of the candle, and it's sharing it with the other moths. We're back in that enclosure, the maziq, right? And in the space, there's a character that Attar calls ناقد. ناقد is an interesting word. Again, not so much in use in conversational Farsi today, but in its most basic sense, a ناقد is somebody who has discernment, who can tell one thing from another, right? More literally, ناقد was somebody who could tell real gold or silver currency from the fake ones, right? ناقد, which is currency. So ناقد was somebody who was familiar with whether a currency was genuine or false. That was the specific meaning. But more generally, it started to get applied to anyone who could tell one thing from another, falsehood from truth, what makes sense from what doesn't make sense, right? So in a general sense, I translate it as a pundit or a sage, somebody who knows and can express discernment about something. Yeah, so nagedi becomes a naged, yek naged.
Right, just like we had yek shabi or yek
maziri. Exactly.
Right, and then again, we have the ke alifov. Again, it's a contraction, ke'u, that he or she dosht, had, dar in, majma, mahi. Okay, what is that?
So majma, we had the word jam before, right? Yek shabi parvanegan jam amadan. So jam implies a coming together, a gathering, right? And majma is another form of jam. Again, it means a gathering. So in this gathering, it's like a noun, right? In a gathering, right? This naged, this pundit or sage, had in this gathering, that dosh dar majma, mehi. Meh is kind of grandness or a high position, right? So mehi is a sense of position of importance or authority or honor. Yeah. So if you have mehi, you're in a position of authority or honor in a group or in a gathering. So dar dosh dar majma mehi means in this gathering, the pundit had a position of respect or honor or greatness.
Mm. And then is mehi a word that we would use in current conversation?
Not very much. Not very much, yeah.
Okay, so it's one of those keywords that we have to know.
Yeah, yeah. It just, as a side note, it usually comes with its counterpart, which is ke. Ke and meh. Ke means smaller or the less of a position, and meh means kind of a higher position. Kehi and mehi usually come together, but here it's just mehi, the higher position. But we don't use that much, yeah.
Okay. So goftu, he or she said.
Goft, he or she said. And then the next part is what the sage says. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's also part of reading some poetry, is knowing kind of when each section or each word kind of has to lead to a pause. Goft, right? Which means the naged, the pundit, said, and then the rest of it is what he said.
Okay. Ura nis as sham ogahi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's parse that.
Throwing shade.
Yeah.
Throwing some shade at the
totally
the one.
Totally throwing shade. Yeah. So okay. Goft, right? The pundit said, ura nist. So we have to kind of just open that up. Nist is there isn't, right? U goes back to the first moth that has been describing the candle, right? So the pundit says, right, ura nist, that moth does not have ura nist. The ra, right, when you put the ra in the middle there between u and nist, you get a sense of that the nist does not mean is not, but rather it's a possession. Ura nist, he doesn't have, it doesn't have, she doesn't have.
Got it.
Yeah. It Got shifts it. The meaning of nis from isn't to hasn't, you know,
Got
just
it.
To put that raw.
That's interesting. Well, one thing we kind of alluded to, but this is a basic thing of Persian, is the u, the Persian does not have gender pronouns. So u can be he, she, it, they, the singular they that we use. And so u is referring to the moth, but then the ra is what we call a direct object marker. And in this case, it's directing the object that it's directing us to is an understanding of the moth.
Yeah, the understanding of the moth, which we're going to get to the word understanding in a second. Yeah, but uranis then here means he or she or they doesn't have, right?
Doesn't have.
Yeah, in modern conversation we would say nadorat, unadorat.
Gotcha.
Right.
Whereas if we just said unist, it would mean the moth isn't, but the moth doesn't have.
Right. Uranis means the moth doesn't have. Perfect. Right now, what doesn't the moth have? As sham ogahi, right? Ogahi, let's talk about that word. It's a contraction of ogahi, which means, again, awareness. So the same kind of idea as, remember, khabar, which we had earlier. Ogahi or ogahi means also awareness, right? So we say, man ogah hastam, I have awareness. Or man ogah nistam, I don't have awareness, right?
So now in modern Persian, when we use agahi for advertisement, is it the same It's just advertising is awareness.
Supposedly. Yeah. And it is in a sense, right? It's to make you aware of a product or an offering or whatever. Exactly.
Interesting.
So same idea in Ogyahi as advertisement. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. As Sham Ogyahi.
As Sham Ogyahi.
So of the candle does not have awareness.
So the Ma does not have awareness of the candle, right? This is what the pundit or the sage declares.
Right.
Govt Ura Nis as Sham Ogyahi. He says, it says, there is this moth does not have true awareness of the candle. Why? Perhaps because the moth has only seen the candle from a distance. That's why in the previous verse we were kind of emphasizing the idea, the previous lesson, the idea that this moth only goes, you know, a certain way. It doesn't go all the way to the candle, but from a distance sees the candle and comes back and relates.
Right. Wonderful. The next line.
Shod yeki digar gozasht az nur dar.
Okay, another one of the moths went or flew and passed through the light of the candle. It flung itself towards the candle from a distance. But what I was going to say is I hear these words and they're all very simple, but the way that they're put together, I'm confused by. So I'm excited to go through this.
Yeah, the reordering of the words really kind of can easily throw us off. But once we kind of get each word's meaning kind of in place, then we put them all together and then we can put them back in the order that makes more sense conversationally, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Let's do it. That's the fun of it. So it starts again with shod, which we had in the previous lesson. Here, shod means raft or went rather than became, right?
Got it. Yeah. Yes.
So again, shod. Now, who went, we have to ask. Yeki digar. Digar, other. So yeki digar, another. So here it refers to another one of the moths. It's implied that another one means another one of the moths, right? So another one of the moths went, which presumably by flying, right? Gozasht az nur. Gozasht az nur. So passed the light or passed through the light. One could say nur was the light. Gozasht az nur, passed or passed through the light. So the second moth passes through the light, right? And here at the end of this half verse or mesra, we have the word dar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do we have this word dar here? What does it have to do with it?
I don't know. Dar could mean, well, of my understanding of it, it could mean inside or it could mean door.
Or within. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So here really, and it shows up in the second half of the verse as well at the end, right?
Yeah.
And so in both halves of this verse, the word dar is really just extraneous to the syntax, right? It's not a necessary word at all, right? But
right.
It's thrown in there, it's used there to complete the meter, right? So that you have the same meter as the previous verses also, because otherwise it would be shod yeki digar gozasht az nur. Right.
Right.
And then you're like, wait, this is missing a syllable because you're now in the music and the meter of the poem. You're like, wait, this is missing a syllable. So the dar is thrown in there as an extra word to add that extra syllable to make the verse rhyme and also have the same meter as the other half and the other verses as well. Does it make sense?
Does it have a meaning, the word?
Here it doesn't really. You could easily just say shod yeki digar gozasht az nur. It's really unnecessary, but it also doesn't necessarily throw you off if you're familiar with the idea that dar or these kinds of prepositions, like I said in Farsi, can just be used willy-nilly and just thrown in there to mean whatever or nothing even sometimes. Yeah. But the main idea is that another of the moths goes forth, right, flies towards and passes through the light of the candle. That's the first half of this, right?
Okay.
And then Chish ra bar sham zad. Let's start with that. Chish is what, Leila?
Self.
Self, exactly. So Chish ra, so the ra again, as we said, kind of implies that there's a transitive kind of action happening, right? To the to the self, right? It's doing something to itself. Now, what is it doing?
Yes.
Right? Chish ra bar sham zad. Right? So it zadan is to throw, right? It could also mean to hit. But here is to throw. So it threw itself, Chishra Zad. Where did it throw itself? Bar Sham, right? At the candle. It threw itself at the candle, right?
Right. As dur.
As dur. So again, from a distance. So this is a repetition of an idea that we had in the last lesson. Just like the first moth that experiences the candle from a distance as dur, the second moth also experiences the candle as dur, although one could say closer, it gets closer than the first moth, right? Because the first moth just sees the light, right? And then comes back and reports. Whereas this moth passes through the light and throws itself at the candle, but it's still from a distance.
Okay. That throws me off a little bit because Bashamzad, it sounds like it's right there and like hits itself on the...
Exactly. But then it says immediately Azdur. So then you're like...
Azdur, yeah.
Okay, wait. It's not so close as I would normally imagine. Exactly. And then the dad, once again, in the second half of the verse is just to keep the rhyme and the meter.
So let's read those first two lines again just to feel it and hear it.
ناقدی کوداشت در مجمع مهی گفت او را نیست از شمع آگه شد یکی دیگر گذشت از نور در خیش را بر شمع زد از دور در.
All right. Okay, so let's see what's going on here. The next line.
پرزنان در پرتو مطلوب شد شمع غالب گشت و او مغلوب شد.
Hey, action-packed line.
Indeed, indeed. Which kind of explains the previous line, right? That kind of presumed contradiction between flinging yourself at the candle, but from a distance, right? So here, Attar explains a little bit. It starts with par zanon, right? Par, feathers or wings, in this case, probably wings, right? Zanon, not the plural of zan, which means
right.
Women. But zanon has to do with zadan again, which we had in the previous verse. So par zadan is not to hit your wings or not to throw your wings, but to flutter your wings, right? So,
yes.
And then zanon is kind of this present tense, right, that describes an action that's ongoing, par zanon, in the act of fluttering its wings. So fluttering its wings, dar partove matlub shod. Shod again. Like the previous verse, has to do with going, right? So it went. While it's fluttering its wings, this moth goes or went. Dar partove matlub. Here, dar actually does have an important role here.
Yeah.
Here means into. So It goes into partove matlub. Into parto means the radiance of something, right? A ray of light that emanates from something. Right? So it goes into the ray of light or into the radiance of what? Of matlub.
Matlub, which we had before.
That which is being desired, the object of desire. Here, going back to the candle. Right. So if we put it all together, parzanon dar partove matlub shod, fluttering its wings, it goes, shod, or it went, dar parto matlub, into the radiance of the candle, of its desired, beloved candle.
And that word partov, is that one that we use in conversation now?
It is. It's a little bit bookish, but we do use it, and it is fairly common in modern usage, and it just means, yeah, like a ray of light, a ray of radiance, something that emanates from a source of light.
I like that it repeats that word par in two different ways that are kind of two different meanings. That's really...
Yes, yeah. It's lovely to note these little kind of delicate things that these poets kind of bring into their work. And it's not easily caught. It can easily be lost. But as you beautifully caught it, par and then parto, just in the sound of it, it also sounds beautiful, the repetition of it. Absolutely.
Right. And one thing that's interesting is that in Persian, we have all these compound verbs. So zadan is one that is used a lot, and I've seen it translated in a lot of different ways. The most literal is to beat, to hit, but I think also to beat is a good one.
Yeah.
So to beat your wings.
Exactly.
It does. Yeah. So it works in a lot of different things if you think of it like that, because dod zadan is to yell out. So I don't know that one, but there's so many that have to do with beating, and we kind of just use it subconsciously when we're speaking Persian, but sometimes if you think about it more literally, I think the beating is a good one here.
Yeah, and once you find that perfect word in the language of translation, like you just did with beat, then it all clicks together. You're like, oh, it makes sense in both ways. That's the perfect translation. That's the perfect word.
Exactly. Whereas, like, it's funny because it's such a small difference to hit and to beat, but then it makes sense. All right, and then the second half.
Sham ghalib gashto u maghlub shod. So he's continuing the narrative, right? The moth is now has fluttered its wings or beat its wings, and it's gone towards into the radiance of its beloved candle. But what happens when that happens? Sham qaleb gashed. So sham being the candle, gashed means became. One of the kind of meanings of gashed is became. We say shod, right, in regular language, but gashed means also that. It became qaleb. So qaleb and maglub, which happens right after that, are again another subject-object pair, right? Two forms of the root word qalabe.
Yeah.
Which means to overpower, to overcome, right? So sham qaleb gashed, the candle overcame, right? Va'u matlub shod, or o'u matlub shod. O again goes back to the
maqlub this time, not matlub, right?
Right, exactly. Just like matlub, here we have maqlub, right? So again, it's the object form of the word, but the word here is qalabe, which means to overcome. So maqlub means somebody who becomes overcome, who becomes overpowered, right? So
qalib and maqlub.
Exactly. So the candle is the qaleb. The candle is the thing that overcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And u, which is the moth, is that which becomes overcome, right? Which becomes kind of overpowered. U maglub shod.
Is qaleb the same word that we use now as like a cast? Like something to put?
No, great question. No, they're okay. Homonyms, but they're spelled differently.
Got
yeah,
it.
Qaleb, okay. The one that means cast, is with a qaf, which has two dots over it. And this qaleb is with a ghain, which has one dot over it also.
Okay. It has similar meanings, though, threw me off. But so these are Arabic words, is that right?
They come from the Arabic, but they're very much part of modern Farsi as well.
Yes, but I hadn't really understood in Arabic how there's three different consonants and then they get kind of messed around with vowels to make different meanings. So then that's what we have here, where we have qaleb.
Yes.
And then maqlub. So it's just changing a little bit where we put the vowels, and then it has a different meaning of like object and then subject and all that.
Perfect. And the three root consonants are dain, lam, vabe, right? So those three consonants, as you said, get kind of interjected with other kind of letters and other sounds to give different meanings, the subject of the act or the object of the act.
Wonderful. And I didn't mean to say there. Arabic word, I get that all the time when I'm teaching Persian. Then people say, all you taught was Arabic. I have to say, yes. Yeah, do you have a small little PSA that you can provide for that?
It's really simple. I mean, we just have to come to terms with the fact that so much of what we call modern Farsi is very much infused with words that come from the Arabic, and we've used it for centuries now. And it's just a fact. I mean, we have to just hopefully get past the good or bad of it all and just admit to the fact of it, you know?
And let's say it's the other way around, too. There is a lot of Persian words in Arabic that they use as well that are part of their language. It goes both ways.
Of course, absolutely. And again, I know I'll get letters from this, too, because there's a lot of purists out there that want to kind of cleanse all of that. But let's not get into that. It's all another conversation.
But your last name is Arabian, so you have nothing to...
Exactly.
There you go. So it's just...
How far can I go into that conversation? Exactly. How much can I object?
Yeah. All right. Okay. So the last line that we're going to go over today.
Sure. So now we see that this moth, we've seen now this moth gets further than the previous moth. But again, as it gets close, somewhere a little bit closer to the candle, it's still from a distance. And even at that level of closeness or distance, somehow the candle overcomes this moth, presumably the heat of the candle, right? Because when you get too close, the heat of the candle starts to get felt. And now this moth kind of becomes overpowered, which means that it doesn't get any closer, right?
It
kind of gets too much affected by this heat of the candle, right? So what will that make the moth do? Presumably it's going to retreat, right? It's not going to get fully into the candle, even though it gets a little bit closer. So the next line kind of expresses that, right? Attar says, Baz gashtu nizo mushti raz goft az vesal sham sharhi baz goft.
This moth also returned and revealed a handful of mysteries. It told an account of its close encounter, interaction, connection with the candle.
Yeah, so those three words, encounter, interaction, connection, all kind of go back to the same word, which is basal, but we're going to get there in a moment. Like, let's start with the beginning of the verse. So, baz gasht u, right? U goes back to the moth again, the second moth. Baz gasht, in modern language, we say bargasht, right?
Yes.
Bar is kind of a reverse, right? It implies a reverse. So, baz gasht, the same idea, it returned, right?
Yeah, which we had that very word in the last line that we learned last lesson, bazgash, or daftar khod bazgash. So that time it bazgash and opened this notebook. This time, what did this one do?
Right. This one comes, niz, which means also, right? So this one also comes back. O moshti raz goft, o or va, and moshti, mosht means a fist, right? Moshti is a fistful, like a fistful of dollars, the Clint Eastwood movie, but here a handful, right? Or a fistful of raz. Raz, mysteries, secrets, right? So this implies, again, that we are kind of in the realm of mysticism, right? That when the moth comes back from the encounter with the candle, it speaks of mysteries. It's a mysterious thing that ultimately this whole story is trying to talk about, right? And so this moth comes back, mushti raz goft, it tells a handful of secrets or mysteries, right? We also, it's good to remember that when we say a handful, I think in English it's the same connotation, moshti, it means not a whole lot, right? It's just a few, a handful of things, right? So moshti ra is a handful of secrets. So implies that in this encounter, the moth has gained some awareness of this mysterious kind of candle, right? And is bringing back that awareness. But again, it's not a whole lot. It's moshti.
Got it.
It's a handful.
Although in conversation, like you could say, "Mushti harf said," when you say that, like "Mushti harf said,"
a bunch of,
just said a bunch of stuff, like. Yeah.
But again, it's dismissive, right? The connotation it's
always dismissive.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
So I feel like in this.
Yeah. When you say it like that, it's clearly dismissive. Exactly.
Yeah, I imagine that this moth is talking and everyone's like, okay.
Although the Raz, right, the fact that it's secrets and mysteries does give it credence, that's true. Right? So it has gained something. It's not just Chertopet.
So maybe it's more, Yemoshi Razgo.
Right, right. But so it's kind of like two words that almost kind of moderate each other, right? The Moshti and the Raz. The Raz tells you it's something meaningful and weighty and useful. But then it's mushti, so it's not a lot of it.
It's like a modicum of it.
It's like a handful of it. And then, so goft. So now this second one tells of these few mysteries, handful of mysteries. What are these about? As vesal sham sharhi bazgo. So these mysteries are about as vesal sham. It's of, right? As here of. Vesal, which is that word that we just talked about briefly. Vesal has the notion of uniting with something, having a connection with something, right? So this connecting interaction, this interaction of somehow connecting with the candle, vesal sham, the connection with the candle, right? And again, vesal is a very, very important and recurring word in mysticism, which has to do with one's kind of ideal experience with the beloved, with the divine, with one's own essential self. To come together and unite with oneself, right? And that is the ultimate kind of experience that the mystics talk about and encourage all of us to try to have. So this moth is having some kind of connection, right? But how deep and how kind of full is this connection? Again, moshti raz, and again, as dur. So it again implies that there is something missing, there is something lacking. It's not the full experience. Yeah, and sharhi, right? Shar is like an account of something, right? An explanation of something, an account of something. And that's very much part of modern Farsi shar that we talked about it, I think, before. And so shar becomes the explanation, the account that the moth gives, an account, sharhi, and again, baz gof, to retell, to recount, as in a story. So the moth returns and speaks a handful of mysteries about its connection with the candle. It retells this experience to the other moths.
Right. And I want to clarify, so the bi norid that we talked about in the first line, that's not the same as this parvon and the win.
No.
So the norid just is judging.
Exactly.
And then other people are going.
Exactly. Other moths are going. The norid is presumably one of the moths, but its role, as you say, may be judging, but more about kind of estimating and discerning and kind of seeing how much each of the moths has had of the full experience of the camp.
Got it. I'm thinking that the Norid is going to come back again and say something about this
one. I think you're thinking right.
Okay, so then that's our second part. So as you can see, each one of these is so rich. We've been talking for 30 minutes just about these four lines.
And that's still not a lot.
I know. We just blew through it. So again, we encourage everyone to go read these four lines on your own terms. We have it defined word by word, phrase by phrase. So you can kind of come to your own understanding of what these four lines are, really sit with it and understand it. And then we'll be back next week where we'll start on the second half of these 16 lines. So Omijan, is there anything else that we want to wrap up with in this lesson?
No, I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes. And I just wanted to reiterate what you said, which is that to encourage people to have their own experience with these, especially because they are of the mystical genre. Everybody that kind of reads these will have their own take, will have their own understanding. And I think that's very, very important not to take anybody else's word for that as well.
And is Attar the same as like Hafiz and Rumi, where people have memorized these, or is it more of something that you read?
Yeah, no, people memorize this, not as common. Hafiz is the most common in terms of things that verses that people know by heart. Rumi probably somewhere below, and then Attar a little bit further down the list. But yes, there are people who can recite entire parables of Attar very easily. And then there are some verses in Mentalotir especially that have very much entered kind of the broader consciousness that people repeat as well, just like Hafiz.
Wonderful. And memorizing always takes these to a whole different level because you'll be in different contexts and these words are a part of you and you can recall them. And I highly always encourage people to do that as well.
If nothing else, also just for the music, which just is so beautiful when it reverberates in your head, as well as all the other facets.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Omijan. And we'll be back next week with the third part of our series on Attar's Parable of the Moon.
Looking forward.